We're in our second week of our sermon series, Created for Significance. I'm Christopher Liberati, the lead pastor here at Willoughby United Methodist Church, and I'm so glad you're here with us today. There's part of me that's torn between the term senior pastor and lead pastor. I don't feel senior yet. Maybe that'll come. I don't know. So I'll stick with lead. It's a sacred honor and privilege to know that the bishop has placed this trust in me. Our parable today is the parable of the prodigal and his brother. It comes from the gospel according to Luke in chapter 15, verses 11 and following. I'll be reading from the New Revised Standard Version, and the Pew Bibles are New International Version. So there might be a little discrepancy in the wording if you are following along. Or if you have your own Bible, I encourage you to open it. Or app. I see Peggy opening up her phone. Thank you, Peggy. So I'll pick up at verse 11. Then Jesus said, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me the share of the property that will belong to me.' So the father divided his property between them. A few days later, the younger son gathered all he had and traveled to a distant country. And there he squandered his property in dissolute living. When he had spent everything, a severe famine took place throughout the country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of the country, who sent him to his fields to feed the pigs. He would have gladly filled himself with the pods that the pigs were eating, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, 'How many of my father's hired hands have bread enough to spare? But here I am dying of hunger. I will get up and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands.' So he set off and went to his father. But while he was still far off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. He ran and put his arms around him and kissed him. Then the son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you, and I'm no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his slaves, 'Quickly bring out a robe, the best one, and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet, and get the fatted calf and kill it. And let us eat and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again, because he was lost and now is found.' And they began to celebrate. Now his elder son was in the field, and when he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing. He called one of the slaves and asked, 'What in the world is going on?' He replied, 'Your brother has come, and your father has killed the fatted calf because he has got him back safe and sound.' Then he became angry and refused to go in. His father came out and began to plead with him, but he answered his father, 'Listen, for all these years I've been working like a slave for you, and I have never disobeyed your command, yet you have never given me even a young goat so that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came back, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fatted calf for him.' Then the father said to him, 'Son, you have always been with me, and all that is mine is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice because this brother of yours was dead and has come to life. He was lost and has been found.' The grass withers and the flower fades, but the word of the Lord endures forever. Thanks be to God." So this parable of the prodigal son and his brother is a common story, and I hope I can preach it justice, because, quite frankly, Jesus preached it pretty good. You know, that he's a hard act to follow. And if I could be honest, I could probably give you some historical background as to the parable. Like the inheritance ratio, for example, two-thirds of his father's wealth would have gone to the older brother, and a third would have gone to the younger brother. Or the fact that the youngest son, what he was asking wasn't necessarily unheard of, but it was rather unusual. But let's be reminded of the fact that this is a parable. It's a story used by Jesus in order to speak truth to the hearts of those who had the ability to hear, which means today his words may speak to each one of us in a different way. Maybe we see ourselves as the older son, angry for the younger son's abuse of riches. Or maybe we'll see ourselves as the younger son, can't wait to break free from the house. Or maybe we'll see ourselves as a loving parent, ready to forgive and lavish love upon our children. Wherever you see yourself in the story, trust that God is speaking to you this morning. So with that in mind, let's first identify these characters of this famous parable. The Father, signifying the greatness of God's love. A.W. Tozer writes of this greatness in this way, and I quote, "Because God is self-existent, his love has no beginning. Because he is eternal, his love can have no end. Because he is infinite, it has no limit. Because he is holy, it is the quintessence of a spotless purity. Because he is immense, his love is an incomprehensibly vast, bottomless, shoreless sea." End quote. This is the love of the Father, a love that knows no ends, knows no guardrails, bounded by nothing. This is the love that we read about today. A love ready to be lavished upon a wayward son. A love ready to be lavished upon us. And then there's the older brother. Straight-laced, ducks in a row, always seeking to please the father. The dream of every mother. This son always has his room clean, his closet tidy, his dresser drawers in order, homework turned in on time, teeth always brushed, sandals put away, chores done without asking, hands clean before each meal, in bed before lights out, and never home beyond the curfew. Juxtaposed to the younger brother. Well now, that's a different story, is it not? He's the one living under the shadow of a perfect older brother. He's the one the teachers are sending notes home about, you know, not living up to the potential. My mom got tons of those, just saying. He's the one that has to be told 50,000 or more times to put the cap back on the toothpaste. It's a common conversation in our house, just saying. He's the one that forgets to take off his muddy shoes at the door. He's the one that can't wait for the day to be free from all the rules that seem to be bogging him down. He's the one that longs to break free from the shadow of his older brother. He's the one who longs to shine on his own merit. He's the one that comes to the Father demanding his portion of inheritance in order to purchase the ticket to freedom. Or at least he thinks so. Granting this request, the father cashes in a third of his retirement portfolio and gives his son a check. He blesses him and hopes that this journey that his son is about to embark on will be the journey that teaches him the lessons that he has ignored while under his father's roof. You know, in life, as parents, or as people, as children, We write tuition checks. We write tuition checks either to a state-certified university or the School of Hard Knocks. And if you don't believe me, listen to this story. My third year of seminary, I still had lots of equipment, expensive equipment. And God kind of nudged me and said, "Are you with me or are you not? Are you in or are you out?" And I says, "I'm in, God. What are you saying?" "Sell your equipment," is what I'm saying. And so I sold a Bobcat. I put it on the market for $25,000. I had all kinds of attachments to go with it. And I had two calls, one from New York and one from about 5 minutes away. And so the person that was 5 minutes away said, "I'll give you a cashier's check for $24,000. And I said, "Sold." And so I delivered the equipment and picked up the check and went straight to the bank and paid off the equipment and paid off some other loans and was in an instant debt-free. And the next day, the person that bought the equipment from me called me back and asked me if I would buy it back from him for $23,000. And I says, "What in the world is going on? Why would you be willing to lose $1,000? He says, "You don't understand. I had an insurance check in my pocket. It was kind of burning a hole in my pocket, and I saw your Bobcat, and I thought it was a really good deal, so I went ahead and bought it without telling my wife." And then she found out, "Will you buy it back?" And I said, "No, I'm sorry. The money's gone." "What do you mean it's gone?" I says, "It was a cashier's check. It was like cash. It paid off accounts. It's gone. There's no way getting it back." And I could hear him like almost crying on the other end of the phone. And I said, "What I can do is I can give you the name and number of this guy in New York who was interested. Maybe he'll buy it." 15 minutes later, I get a call from this guy in New York. "What in the world is going on? This guy says he bought the equipment from you for $24,000 yesterday, and now he's ready to turn around and sell it for $23,000. And I told him what he did, and he's like, "Oh boy." I says, "Yeah, he's getting ready to write a check to the School of Hard Knocks." And he goes, "What do you mean?" And I said, "You either write a check to a university or the School of Hard Knocks. It's called Learning a Life Lesson the Hard Way." He kind of chuckled and he says, "Yeah, I'm going to use that. I've never heard that before, but I like it." So with no parameters, no boundaries, and nothing holding him back, the younger son went to a far-off land. And well, quite honestly, he had a blast. He had a blank check, almost. A new wardrobe, Gucci saddlebags for his camel. He frequented the best falafel stand and tipped generously. Quite frankly, he drew a crowd that seemed to enjoy his lavish, generous lifestyle. This would eventually come to an end, and he would reach rock bottom, taking care of pigs, which was an absolute insult to Jews. Who'd have guessed? It's at the bottom of a hog's feeding trough that this son would graduate summa cum laude from the School of Hard Knocks, where he'd realize how good he really had it living at home, even under the shadow of his older brother. He longed for his mother's cooking and his father's embrace. So, from the depths of his newly educated heart, he formulated his plea for forgiveness. He crafted his offering of an apology. "Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands." And he swallowed his pride and he headed off for home. Each step of the way, rehearsing and rehearsing and rehearsing his apology. The love of the Father, though, generous beyond all understanding, longing for his son's return, praying and keeping a watchful eye out for a weary traveler day and night, watching and waiting, hoping that what he had taught his son through the years of growing up would instill be in him like a homing device, a beacon longing to come home. And one day, he saw his son off in the distance, dropping everything and running to embrace him, wrapping his arms around him, kissing him. Can you feel the love? Can you feel the joy? Can you feel the relief of a father? My son has come home. He's learned his lesson. Daddy, he starts, I'm sorry. His well-rehearsed apology cut off mid-sentence. Come, let's celebrate. Get the fatted calf. Where's the finest robe? Put the signet ring back on his finger, which in essence was restoring his line of credit. Beyond his expectation, his son stands there with the expectation of just being a hired servant, and yet he's embraced, loved, and forgiven. Welcome back into the arms of his father. And so the party begins. Can you imagine for a moment if the older son would have seen him first? Boy, talk about an I told you so kind of moment, right? The older brother would have been there, are you kidding me? Get lost. You're crazy. You're a fool. You wasted dad's money. There's no place here for you. Go on, get. But that's not what happened. Jesus is talking about the lavish love of a God who goes to the ends of the earth to pursue us, to love us, to bring us back into that right relationship, and to celebrate the lost because it's been found. Finally, the older brother catches wind of the celebration and confronts his father. He says, listen, for all these years I have been working like a slave for you and I have never disobeyed you, your command. Yet you have never given me even a young goat so that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came back, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fatted calf for him. Can you sense the anger and frustration? But when this son of yours comes back, you ever do that before? Disown somebody? He didn't say my bonehead brother that came back. When he came to his senses, no, he said, when your son came back. I got to admit, I got the giggles when I read that and it clicked in my head because so often in our house, I don't see him in the pews, thank goodness. So often in our house, if my son does something that irritates his mom that I would do, I hear those words, your son, you know what I'm saying, right? The anger of the older brother couldn't even acknowledge the kinship of his brother. It wasn't my brother, it was your son. And so his father says this, it is because it's your brother who is lost and now is found. That's what's worth celebrating. It's also worth pointing out the accusation leveled by the older brother. He writes, or it said, he devoured your property with prostitutes. Wow, I think. I didn't read that in the parable. I didn't hear those words from Jesus. I wonder, I do, is it or could it be a revealing of the heart and nature of the older brother? Could it be that's how he would have spent his inheritance? It's such a strong accusation, and he had no idea because he was off in a far land. I do, I wonder. Probably revealing how he would have spent his inheritance had he had the courage and boldness of his younger brother. And then he's confronted with what matters most to the father. The father says, son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice because this brother of yours was dead and has come to life. He was lost and has been found. Notice how the Father rekindles the kinship. It is your brother that we are celebrating. It is your brother. Friends, we have brothers and sisters out there that don't know this story, that need to hear this story, the story of a father who lavishes his love and forgiveness upon her no matter what. I'll close with this story of how God's love is like equal, whether we are wayward or whether we are always there. So my grandparents, God rest their souls, they had 11 children. And that meant I had 20 first cousins. Can any of you relate to that? That's a big number. There we go. 20 first cousins. So the best time of the year for me was during Thanksgiving and Christmas, because that's when the family all gathered at Grandma and Grandpa's. And every last one of us were there playing, laughing, singing, crying, acting out, getting in trouble. And it was just a good time. And I had a leg up. If I had to be honest, I had a leg up on my other cousins, because I had actually lived with my grandparents for a year. It was during second grade when my mom was working as a single mom, and she was working a plant job, so she was gone all the time. And so my grandparents took me in, and I became the 12th son. And so I knew in my heart that I was grandma's favorite. Matter of fact, I wasn't allowed to call her grandma like the rest of the cousins. I called her mom by her prompting. So I just knew. And so when at her funeral, we were all grieving. And one of my cousins, who's way more articulate than I am, got up there and shared some stories and was celebrating the life of our grandmother. And she said this. She goes, "And by the way, I was grandma's favorite." There was an audible gasp and a lot of rejection from 20 of us in the audience saying, "That's not true, I am." And all of a sudden we started looking around. And so after the funeral, we kind of met in the parking lot to hash it out, to find out who really was grandma's favorite. Come to find out, grandma had a knack, right? She would pull each one of us aside when nobody was looking and put us in the crook of her arm. And she would look down upon us and say, "Now don't tell anybody, but I want you to know you're my favorite." And we believed it. We did. That's the kind of love that we have in our Heavenly Father, who puts us in the crook of his arm and he looks upon us and he says, "You're my favorite, but don't keep it a secret, because everybody is my favorite. Everybody matters to me. You matter, and we need to let the world know how much they matter." And so I wonder, in this story of the prodigal son, can we embrace the Father's love that is lavished upon us? Can we embrace the forgiveness of a Father who would restore us, not just in worldly wealth, but in heavenly treasures beyond our comprehension? Can you fall in love with a God that loves you that much? I wonder. I do. Would you pray with me? A gracious and loving God, help us to understand more fully what it means to be your child, brother or sister, aunt or uncle, mother or father, all of us embracing the width and depth and breadth of your love, your forgiveness, your reconciliation. Help us to know what really matters in your eyes, a clean heart and a willingness to return home. Thank you for your love. Amen.